Hello, folks. Just before you listen to this week's episode with Rob Taylor Hastings, all about the world's worst robot. A quick hello from Ben and myself.
Hello!
Nice to have you with us. This week is the week my play Vespertilio opens in Dublin. If you want to see what I do when I'm not rabbiting in your ears on your commute, then you can come to Smock Alley Theatre in Dublin as part of the Dublin Fringe and see Vespertilio, my play, from the 17th to the 22nd of September. That's tomorrow, Tuesday till Sunday. The cast are amazing, the director's amazing, the design amazing, and the writing's not that bad either.
It's real good. Enough of this bullshit false modesty.
Yeah.
If you are on the island of Ireland, go and see this. And even if you're not on the island of Ireland, flights from EasyJet are like a tenner. So you could fly to Dublin, see Barry's play, and then come back to wherever you are on the mainland, and it would still cost less than seeing some bobbins in the West End.
Yeah, so please do buy tickets. There are a few left. So, and thank you in advance. If you do come along and you're a listener of the show, do let me know, because rather like Ben in Edinburgh, it's lovely when people come up and say, oh, we're here seeing you do something else, or listening to you do something else apart from the podcast.
Yeah, and Barry will buy you a fudge bar.
Oh, yeah, I probably deserved that, to be fair. I don't know.
Yeah, you did.
You know what theatre shows love is a good review. You know what podcasts love? Good reviews as well.
Damn right. We got a couple of really nice reviews this week, so thank you to those who gave that. I know you might be thinking, God, this podcast is 2.5 years old. You still need them. Yes, we do. Not for our egos, but for the algorithms on all the various platforms. So if you've got a spare 10 minutes, well, to be honest with us, if you've got a spare... No, that would be like writing an essay on how much you enjoy the show. If you've got a spare minute, then pop onto your podcast app of choice, give us 5 stars and a couple of sentences, and that makes a world of difference. I was going to say 10 minutes, because pick your top 5 podcasts, of which hopefully we are one, give them all a cheeky 5-star review, yeah, and you will be getting your podcast halo polished. So thanks for doing that in advance. If you would like to contact us, you can do it on @worstfoot on Twitter. I'm on @BenVanderveld. He is on @BazMcStay. And if you want to see the lineups at my comedy club, it's @GoodShipComedy.
You can also send us an email to worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com and visit our website, worstfootforwardpodcast.com, which has all of our previous episodes. Ben's giving that a nice little polish this week, so it's looking nice and shiny and new.
Yes, and the last bit of podmin before we get on with the show is that a few of you contacted us recently about the fact that episodes 1 to 40 had gone AWOL in your feeds. I have fixed that problem using advice from a support person. Not like social services. I didn't like dial 111 and go, my podcast's not working properly.
Although that would be, hello, is it ambulance, police, fire or podcast?
Yeah. I had someone in my audience on Monday night who worked for 111, and I asked her what the most trivial thing someone rang up for, and it was a guy, obviously a guy, who rang up to say, I've got an eyelash stuck in my eye. Can you please send out an ambulance?
No, I was imagining dick stuck in keyhole or something.
Lucky keyhole. Yeah, you now have, you know, potentially about 50 more hours of podcasting to enjoy if you came to us lately. So do enjoy that. Spread the news far and wide to your friends and engage podcast listening programming protocols for our episode starting now on the world's worst robot. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast that each week celebrates the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vanderveld, and this week you find me back in the Worst Foot Forward laboratory. We're conducting cutting-edge research into the world of automata to discover whether sheep dream of electric humans and what Asimov's fourth law of robotics is. It is that you don't talk about the first three laws, especially if you're going to turn on your creator. Sexually. I am currently surrounded by circuit boards full of board circuits, mechanical arms that do nothing but twiddle their thumbs, and if you're really unlucky, your thumb as well, and a robot dog with a broken linguistic circuit that won't stop playing Felch. With me, stepping out of the uncanny Rift Valley like the perfect rendering of a fully developed podcast host, look, you can almost see the reproduction of genuine human light behind his eyes, is the BazBot 5000, Barry McStay.
how do you have my 90s MC name?
Basbot M5000 checking it on the mic.
I really wanted one of those. You know the little robot dogs that were like massive in the 90s when we were kids?
The ones that would go squeak, 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 yeah. Backflip.
Yeah, those ones. Yeah. I had them on a little lead and they'd do like this really weird little walk. Uh-huh. Which looked like sort of Smarties tubes trying to animate themselves. I really, really wanted one of them. And then my cousin got one and I was immensely jealous of her.
They were.
I had a real dog, it has to be said, by the way. But I really wanted a robot dog.
That you kept
dog.
Trying to insert batteries into. Yeah. I don't know, they were. I sort of filed them away in the same place as the sunflowers that moved when you sang to them.
Oh, yeah. There was one of them in the office I used to work in, and it went off when you with proximity. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like you had to press a button, it was just if anyone walked near it, it would like ambush them and start singing and walking on sunshine.
Oh, that's really terrible office security.
Yeah, did you ever have one of the Billy Bass fish?
No.
Wasn't it simpler times when that was what people spent their money on?
Yeah, I like to think the Billy Bass fish is sort of like the thinking man's Newton's cradle. Sorry, the unthinking man's Newton's cradle.
And there you see where we pitch this podcast intellectually.
Damn right.
Our guest this week is an actor, writer, presenter, and his first brush with stardom came when he auditioned for drama school in a room that also had me in it. As an actor, he has done Shakespeare, created his own web series, and notably appeared in the likes of an Only Fools and Horses dining experience and, like Ben and myself, the Crystal Maze Live Experience London, proving he will literally only work on shows with an element of cult fandom. Welcome to Worst Foot. Our fans are the mildest mannered cult you'll ever meet, by the way. Seriously, they're more blood oranges than blood sacrifice.
Okay.
As a toy reviewer, he earned the acclaim of top 30 under 30 to watch in the toy industry in 2018.
Hang on, being someone to watch in the toy industry means something a little bit different.
At least it's under 30 rather than over.
That's a very different list.
That's thanks to his written reviews on Toyology and his work presenting for Kidtropolis and Spin Master. In terms of ridiculously easy non-jobs, toy reviewer is very much up there with computer game tester, chocolate taster, and podcast co-host. He also co-hosts a podcast. Roboteers Stand By is a podcast which recaps and reviews everything robots, from competitive robot combat leagues like Robot Wars and King of Bots to global STEM initiatives. With his experience of watching on as two unusual-looking, slightly ramshackle creations beat the hell out of each other in an extremely nerdy blood sport, he's well-equipped to sit between Ben and me on this show. Please welcome possibly our most handsome guest ever,
oh, wow.
Rob Taylor Hastings.
Thank you very much, boys. That was a wonderful combination of hype and ribbing.
I mean, maybe not the most vocally handsome, because that's a separate category.
Oh, is that okay?
Yeah, is that still Tom Crowley?
I think it's still Tom Crowley, yeah.
Damn, I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, okay, you can drink his voice in a glass with like one cube of ice and a little squeeze of lemon.
Oh, that's good to know. I'll get him on ours then.
But the thing is, with the greatest of love to Tom Crowley, is that his voice out-handsomes his face, whereas...
your face out-handsomes your voice.
I think they're a match.
You know? Thank you very much. Cheers. Yeah. It's what I've been working on. Equilibrium.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for listeners, this is obviously an audio medium. Imagine how handsome you think Rob is. And double it.
Yeah. Wow, and the thing is, you're not. You are handsome, but you're a specific subset of handsome, which is dashing.
Wow. Handsome brackets dashing.
Yeah, that's what you put if you could put on Spotlight.
Oh yeah. Or if it's an Olympic sport, like you've got swimming, but then you've got the different strokes. Well, you've got handsome brackets vocal, handsome brackets dashing.
My God, I hope you're
handsome brackets, but not in an obvious way.
Yeah, that's the best one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's like you have that ugly as well. Like, but like it's going to go like ugly, malformed, ugly, unevolved, ugly, but kind of cool, e.g. Steve Buscemi.
Yeah, no, I'll give you that. That's the cooler way of being, really, surely. Yeah. You're looking at that's an interesting face.
Yeah, ugly brackets, interesting face.
Yeah. Yes. Ugly brackets, midwife would punch the parents.
Rob, we always ask our guests what they're worst at in the world. Obviously, being visually stunning is the top of your list. What's bottom of your list?
Thanks, Murray.
God, don't even look at me.
I look at this wall over here.
Wall is so turned on.
Good God, it's grown about 3 feet.
Yeah, that wall just erected itself. It was a pile of bricks before you turned up.
It's a nightmare walking down the street for me, guys, just building houses.
Rob is so handsome, the Amish aren't needed to put up bodies around him.
Christ. I think worse at taking the compliment, actually.
Yeah, sorry. Handsome brackets, Amish arousing.
I actually had a genuine crisis thinking about this, because I was like,
good.
Well, surely there's, well, there could be one thing.
You see, we build you up to knock you down.
Yeah, I was like, then I thought another thing, and then another thing, and then, oh, Jesus, I think I'm the worst at everything. So my worst thing, I think, Ben, you can attest to this from today, is turning up wildly early. I'm always just too... It's mostly for airports and train stations.
Uh-huh.
I can't not turn up about 3 hours earlier than I need to.
No, let's be fair. You turned up, I think, 8 minutes early.
Yeah.
I was still sort of pootling around the house, but no, wildly early.
You didn't see me doing laps around your house.
I do that with auditions.
Yeah.
Like, I'll show up half an hour early and then, like, do circuits of the different press and coffee shops around the area.
I once jumped to an airport so early they just put me on the earlier version of that flight. I didn't have to rush through security. They're like, no, you can now just amble through at the normal pace. You're here 8 hours early, you freak.
Do you just love duty free?
No, I just you talking about your earlier holidays and
yes, you know, I was in Ireland this week or yesterday for literally a day, and my flight back involved me literally getting a taxi through heavy traffic to the airport, walking through security, and immediately boarding the flight.
Yeah, that has
me. Rob broke out in hives.
Yeah, just a cold sweat. The idea. Yeah. I hate that. Oh, I just hate it. It's. I think it's the thing that my wife is most vocal about hating about me. She's vocal about quite a few things. That's the thing.
Your punctuality.
Yeah, she's like, for God's sake.
It's a breaking point.
Yeah.
At your wedding, you actually beat her down the aisle.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that is how it works. Yeah. Oh, that wasn't a punchline. That was just protocol.
But here's another go. During the vows, you said I do before the minister had gotten to the end of the sentence.
Very good, absolutely. Yeah. And drawing sex, I always... No, okay.
How would you describe yourself in the bedroom? Punctual.
Wildly punctual. I'm like a wizard, I come precisely when I mean to.
We are talking about the world's worst robot, which, considering that we are apparently at the bottom of a very steep J-curve, according to robotic thinkers like Ray Kurzweil, where AI is going to rule over us in 20 to 25 years, this could feel like the opening salvo in a war against our future overlords.
Oh, right. Shall I open fire, then?
Yeah. No pressure, Barry, but you're opening the batting for Team Human.
Who'd have thought that the fate of humanity would rest on this podcast's shoulders? The origin of the word robot and robots in general?
It is Czech, isn't it?
Yeah, it's from a play by a Czech playwright called Karel Čapek, called RUR, which stands for Rossum's Universal Robots. It premiered in January 1921 at the National Theatre in Prague. It's very sci-fi. The plot is it's a factory who make robots on an island, and they're identical to humans. Like, there are human characters who mistake the robots for human beings, and the robots are initially working for humans, and they're very happy to do that. But eventually, spoiler, a rebellion happens, and it leads to the extinction of the human race. And the robots all have really cool names. There's Marius, Radius, Primus, Demon, or Damon. And
Damon's very different.
Well, it's one of those where it's spelled D-A-E. And there are robotesses. The character list has Helena, a robotess, and Sulla, a robotess.
Oh, so clearly robotic feminism hadn't evolved enough yet that they couldn't just be, you know, gender non-specific robots.
Yeah.
I'm actually a robot, not a robotess.
They're not robots in necessarily the way we'd imagine it, because they're a bit close to androids or replicants, because they are made of organic material.
Do you explain the difference? Do you know robot and a robot?
Robots are made of metals, and they're completely mechanical, whereas androids and replicants in Blade Runner, they're sort of organic materials, and
it's a cyborg because organic material comes into play.
Technically androids don't exist anywhere outside of sci-fi, unless you're talking about the guy who's able to see now because he's got wires in his head.
I suppose that he's kind of augmented, then, as augmented human. It's so I think it's come up on our podcast a couple of times, where do you draw the defining line of robot, android, cyborg, mechanoid? And the thing I always come back to is, I don't care. I've not got the capacity to even begin to.
Why do we have to label all these robots?
Just call it a robot, it's fine, isn't it, really?
Yeah, the play describes kneading troughs for the skin to be kneaded in.
In order to make it?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, to get to the right, you know, like you've got to knead dough to get the right sort of tensile strength in it.
It's got vats
of organs and stuff. There's a factory that makes bones, and the arteries, nerves, and intestines are spun on bobbins. And then it's all put together on an assembly line.
I'm never going to sing Wind the Bobbin Up to my son in the same way again.
Yeah. Chapek actually credited his brother Joseph for the word. It comes from the Czech word robota, which means forced labour, like a serf used to do on a farm. And rab is a Czech word meaning slave, so they're all interlinked.
Wow, don't tell the Scottish that.
And it had a run in English in London, in St. Martin's Theatre in 1923, and a run in New York in 1922 at the Garrick Theatre, which ran for 184 performances. And Spencer Tracy made his Broadway debut in it, playing one of the robots.
What?
Bloody hell, all right.
It's great, isn't it?
Where is that trivia come from?
I would love to see Spencer Tracy playing a robot. I mean, all those hard-boiled detective characters.
No, he's actually been like Decker from Blade Runner in every single hard-boiled detective.
It's in his contract.
What else did I read about? You mentioned in your intro mechanical arms and things like that. So the first mechanical arm I could read about, in 1954, a guy called George C. Devol patented one. And then in 1961, a chap called Joseph Engelberger used that patent to create Unimate, which is the first sort of mechanical arm. They used it on a General Motors assembly line in New Jersey. And it's the typical, like, we have in our head of a car assembly line. And it's used for do specific tasks using simple software. AI, which you mentioned as well, trying to link that to a mechanical arm is like a dream for people working in robotics at the moment. So the first sort of AI creation, maybe, was created by a guy called William Gray Walter, who was a British neuroscientist in Bristol in 1948-49. He created these two little turtle things called Elsie and Elmer, whose circuits mimicked neurons in the brain, and they would follow a light source. So if you shone a torch, they'd sort of move and follow the light source. But people are still working on trying to sort of marry up artificial intelligence with robotics in, like, a really perfect way. And around 2012, people have started creating these deep neural networks in AI using deep learning, which I think we talked about with Andrew Somerville on World's Worst Algorithm podcast. And basically feeding huge amounts of information to artificial intelligence so they'll just learn and suddenly be able to identify objects in pictures with almost human perfection. They use this stuff in facial recognition and speech transcripts, self-driving cars and all that. And they're trying to give robots greater dexterity using AI. And one of the ways that they're doing this is Amazon is running a robot picking challenge. Remember on the World's Worst Railway, we talked about the Rainhill trials with Steve Gribben, where they were like testing out early locomotives. It's basically that for robots in an Amazon warehouse. Or like the Wacky Races for robots. Yeah. Where they'll send off robots sweeping the warehouse, giving them like shopping lists of stuff to try and find them and identify them and bring them back.
It's supermarket sweetness!
Amazing. So it's AI physically interacting with the world will help them learn. In the same way that babies learn by interacting with the world, they think robots, it's much better for robots to learn in that way than it is for them to be fed lots of human examples.
So that's sort of like how humans learn as well, though, isn't it?
By
trial and error.
Exactly. And they think that actually, they call it deep reinforcement learning. And there's a company called Osaro, founded by a guy called Derek Pridmore. And he teaches these robot pickers using this deep reinforcement. Basically, they give them points, like in a computer game, and so better, more points for finding the, like, picking out the right piece of chicken to put in a sushi box and things like that. And that's really hard for a robot to do. So if you give a pile of things to know the right thing. But now it's the algorithm is getting so expert at finding, like, the right item that it can an arm can pick up an object if it's hidden, if it's moved, or if it's shaped slightly differently to the previous ones it was picking up as well, which is it's basically human level of intelligence. Oh, I read about useless machines. Have you seen these?
Oh, they're wonderful.
They're so good.
Go on.
They were being made by a late Italian futurist, our old friends, a guy called Bruno Munari in the 30s. But the most famous version of a useless machine is invented by a guy called Marvin Minsky. And this was made it's great. It's an inventor nickname for me.
Yeah, Marvin Minsky, who was created by Stanley.
Yeah. His famous version from the 50s is a box, which when you switch it on, a little hand reaches out and turns the switch back off again.
All it does.
Its existence is to turn itself off.
Oh, yes, I have seen those. They're beautiful.
So the commercial application of them is the coin box, where you put a coin on a little switch and the hand reaches out of it and pulls the coin.
Yes, that's the one I've seen.
Yeah, Minsky made this when he was a grad student at Bell Labs. He called it the ultimate machine, actually. His mentor was a guy called Claude Shannon. He had one of them on his desk, and Arthur C. Clarke saw it when he visited him one day. He was fascinated by it, and he called it unspeakably sinister to have a machine whose sole existence was to turn itself off again.
I don't know, I'm just sort of thinking if there is a god, I sort of feel like that's what he made human beings for.
Yeah.
To turn himself off.
Yeah. Just to turn the universe off.
Yeah. Minsky also invented a gravity machine which will ring a bell if the gravitational constant changes. That is not expected to happen in the near future.
That's just a bell, isn't it? If the gravity just changes, the bells will ring.
Yeah, actually, that's probably true.
Yeah. Oh, the bells are ringing. Gravity change, like myself, because the bells are floating in the air.
I also read about, there was a warehouse, an Ocado warehouse, which burnt down in Ocado.
But it smelt delicious.
Yeah. Ocado is a supermarket home delivery service for our non-British listeners.
It's not a delivery service for our non-British listeners. You're going to like, where'd you get your Ocado delivery to? To Tuvalu.
Yeah. These avocados are slightly overripe.
Yeah, especially since they were picked in New Zealand. Flew to the warehouse over here and then went back to Polynesia.
In February 2019, the Ocado warehouse in Andover, it burnt down, caught fire. It was a massive evacuation of houses nearby. There was worry the place would explode. And it was massive. It was handling 65,000 orders daily. Using robotic arms. It had 1,100 shoulder-height little robots on wheels going around the warehouse collecting different items and putting packs away alongside human workers. Mm. So there's like this weird photo of like a human in her high-vis vest with her arm around her robot co-worker.
Oh, no. He's going to replace me. Yeah.
And then the robot worker with its arm around her throat.
Yeah. An investigation into the cause of the fire discovered that there was a fault in a charger which set the plastic hat on top of the robot on fire.
Was this robot running around with a flaming head, screaming in agony, well, that's setting fire over the
As someone pointed out, unlike a human worker, it couldn't smell the fire on top of its own head.
See, that sort of stuff reassures me that we're going to last a few more decades than we thought.
I love the idea that it was picking orders just ablaze, and it's sort of crazy, like, do you want us to... What's wrong? What are you all looking at me for?
Like Fire Dog in the cafe.
Exactly, mate.
I've got one more for you before my choice. In January 2018, LG, the electronics company, launched a robot called Chloe, spelled C-L-O-I, calling itself the ultimate in simplicity when managing your smart home. So LG were launching all of these like smart home gimmicks and gadgets and things, and they had various different like Porter robots and and they had voice activated stuff in various TVs and things they produced and speakers, but they wanted like an Alexa or a Google Home thing that you could, you know, ask it what the weather would be like, or what food you've left in your fridge, or what, you know, recipe I can make with these ingredients. So they unveiled it at Las Vegas' CES Tech Fair, massive tech fair. All the big global companies launched different products at it. And it was launched by LG's US marketing boss, David Vandervaal. And
No relation.
And they made it. It's a deliberately cute looking little robot. It looks like is it Eva is the female robot in WALL-E?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like got that sort of level of cute to it. He put it on, brought it on stage, and asked it what his timetable for the day was, and it spouted out his timetable perfectly. And everyone's like, "Wow, very interesting." And then he asked it, "What's for dinner? And is my washing ready? And can you suggest a recipe for chicken?" And it just blinked at him. All three questions. Someone who was in the audience said, at first, people thought, oh, it's a mistake, he'll go again. Second question went, oh, there's something wrong here. By the third one, there was muttering in the room and everyone was feeling really sorry for this guy. people reacted on... Obviously, they were launching lots of other products that day, but the YouTube clip of that just went viral.
Of course, yeah.
People were tweeting things like, RIP Chloe 2018 to 2018. And Chloe is clearly a feminist robot not wanting to be ordered about in her kitchen.
Yes, it was a very withering blink.
But my choice for the world's worst robot are the employees of Japan's Hen Na Hotel, Ben, I think we've talked about this.
Oh. Yes, we have. It won our World's Worst Host episode. Yeah. Great to have them back.
Glorious. I'm intrigued about this now.
So, in Japan's Henna Hotel, there's a chain of them. They employ robot receptionists, robot cleaners, robot porters, robot in-room assistants.
What is a robot in-room assistant?
That's like an Alexa, that sort of thing.
Oh, right, okay.
They put your slippers in the right place, if I remember rightly from our episode about this.
Is it on your feet?
That's the right place. The receptionists are dinosaurs and humanoids. in the version of Jurassic Park we really want to see. Jurassic Park 2 Lost in New York. They have had to reintroduce human staff to maintain the service standards at this hotel because the robots break down, they're expensive to run, and they annoy the guests. The dinosaur or humanoid receptionists are unable to answer queries about airports and local tourist attractions. And this is what I really love. Anytime they needed to register a passport for someone checking in, they had a human on standby to step in and do that. Can you imagine being that human being who has to sit idly by watching, you know, someone come in and go, "Oh, can you tell me where the airport is?" And the robot goes, "The time is 12. And he goes, "No, airport. The weather is sunny with some clouds. Airport. What can I do to help you?"
Sounds like Chloe would fit perfectly.
Yeah, I also like the idea of the guest looking and being like, "Excuse me, you in the back, can you imagine?" He's like, "No, I'm only allowed, if you need a passport registered, because I can't do anything unless it's a passport."
Surely a passport being scanned is the easiest thing that a robot could possibly do.
They do it at airports. Yeah. Also, but these dinosaurs definitely don't know what passports are.
How lame would you feel like, "What's your job? I'm a spotter for a robot."
Yeah. I'm his backup guy.
Yeah.
A check-in 65 million years in the making.
No. I need desperately to go to that hotel.
You really do. Yeah. Definitely, you need to bring the podcast to Japan and stay in one of these. Oh, they have luggage carriers who aren't able to get to all the rooms in the hotel. I'm imagining they're like Daleks and can't do stairs.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
Some of them would break down when they get wet.
Of course.
And they have an in-room assistant called Churi, who struggles to understand accents. So you say, "Hello, Churi," and it doesn't necessarily... So, you know, if you went full Newcastle... Or sorry, Newcastle... I think it would probably blow Churi's mind.
Yeah. Well, but also, I don't think there are that many Geordies going to stay at the robot hotel in Japan. I mean, I'm not...
Again, that's a sitcom I'd watch.
Yeah.
Away the labs.
Oh, God. No, that's just one about a team of Labradors taking on crops.
Like Mike Bassett, England manager, but with
Mike Bassett Hound.
Churi also apparently woke one guest on one occasion because he thought his snoring was a command. He kept asking him to repeat his request.
That is a sick burn.
Can't imagine waking up and it's pitch black except for two glowing eyes and repeat that request.
HIS is the company that runs these hotels, and the president of the company, Hideo Sawada, said, "When you actually use robots, you realise that there are places where they're not needed or they just annoy people."
Well, there's a robot cafe opening in Milton Keynes this year.
Say what?
Yeah, it's called Robot Zania. We know nothing about it, except for they will have robot waitresses. And
are they going to be like the waitresses in the diner in The Jetsons?
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely, yeah. God, I thought you were going to go for The Clone Wars then. You remember that weird 1950s diner that Obi-Wan attends?
Oh, yeah!
With Dexter Jetster.
On Coruscant,
yeah. It's just odd. It's the oddest scene in that entire prequel series.
I mean, it's a terrible movie all round, but... will there be human staff as well?
There'll be human staff. I mean, I met these guys at an event a couple of weeks ago called RoboNerd.
Right.
Up in Wolverhampton, of all places.
I mean, they're opening a cafe in Milton Keynes. Wolverhampton is a big city for them.
It's a bit... lots of commute from Wolverhampton.
That says something about the personality of people in the Midlands that they're really obsessed with robots there.
It is literally a hub for it. It's bizarre how it happened. I think on the same street, three of the Robot Wars champions grew up separately, didn't know each other, then realised that they... lived on the same street as kids. So wow. Something in the water there. I don't know what that is.
It's probably mercury.
Not going to live past 65. But yeah.
So, but is Robot Wars on American TV as well? Is there a similar program?
Yeah, there is. The history of Robot Wars is really an odd back and forth. So
you want to tell people what it is in case they don't know?
Oh, yeah. So, Robot Wars is a robot combat show where... white hot nerds do white hot nerd things, which is robots smashing into each other until only one remains.
And they build these like your electronic car that people be driving, but they'll have like unarmored.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So actually, robot combat is an international phenomenon, really. And it's something that I was wonderfully ignorant to until we started the podcast. Actually, right. Started looking into the thing we decided to talk about. So yeah, Robot Wars. It started in America, 1994-95, and then it came over to England for Robot Wars. Then it went back to America. There were some problems with the rights for the name Robot Wars, so they started BattleBots.
Right.
And then recently, the Chinese have started with King of Bots and This Is Fighting Robots.
That's been through Google Translate.
Yes, it has a little bit. It's wonderful to watch. So yeah, it really is an international thing. Very quintessentially British kind of experience,
it's
I think.
So it's like gladiators but with powers. It's so funny.
I really recommend going back and watching.
And
then
they win by
series.
Flipping or just smashing the other car or the robot to pieces.
Yeah, ring out or just a knockout is always the best, of course, or rolling into the pits. That's always a bad thing to do.
When you say a knockout, is there a robot referee who counts them?
There was a ref bot, yes. I think from series ref four. Bots. Yeah, between series 4 and 8. There was a ref bot that was complete. He had in one hand he had a fire extinguisher, and in the other hand he had a mechanical sign that had a red and yellow card on it. So like, back off now! And he had a timer on his chest so he could count you out as well. But there's huge rules. So Robot Wars has been cancelled in the UK now again for like the third time.
Yeah, but it's been cancelled over here because it's very politically incorrect to the robot community.
It's very
it's like modern cockfighting.
Yeah.
There's enough tweets that we thought, you know what, guys, this is the end of this.
Cogfighting.
Yes, very, very good. Actually, the name of the podcast. but yeah, it's still going. So the FRA, the Fighting Robot Association, was before Robot Wars, and it went through when we got cancelled in the early 2000s, and it's still going. So I host Robots Live, and we host the Robot Champions every year.
You're wearing your t-shirt, you're on brand.
Yes, yeah, so I found it in the cupboard, and I was like, hang on.
Yeah.
On brand. Yeah, so it's great, it's still going, and these robots have got more and more sinister and incredibly well built, as you'd imagine.
Some
of them
breathe fire, they've got arms and buzz saws on them and stuff.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, as always, the Americans do it much better than we do. So, Robot Wars had very strict rules. There was no projectiles, including fire. But the Americans,
bloody Brexit.
they specifically cited Brexit in that.
I'd love to see a Brexit bot just made out of red, white and blue flags and old cans of Spam
just constantly trying to leave the arena.
Yeah. Punching itself in its face. Yeah. yeah, but BattleBots, they have flamethrowers, they have drones as well.
Amazing!
They do their whole, they're all. There's one robot called Blacksmith, which has combined a hammer with fire. So it's just a flaming hammer that just smashes around. There is a couple of cluster bots that have just drones that have flamethrowers on them.
Wow.
Oh, it's cluster bots.
Cluster bots, yeah.
There's a robot that goes in and then separates out into its constituent parts.
There is one in the old wars called Gemini that did that. Yeah, there's two back to back that are separated.
Like the Zoids in Power Rangers.
The Zoids are a different kind of toy robot.
The Zoids are a different
toy. Oh, yeah,
you can literally say any syllable and it's a robot.
Yeah. Starting with Z.
The Borgs.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yeah. They were serious fighters.
The Scramps.
The
Bergs are, of course, a nice Jewish robot. the mother robot goes in and goes, my son is a very talented robot. He works at Harvard. And the other robots die of shame.
Yeah, cluster bots, they are basically, you have a weight limitation in fighting robots.
Of course you
fat shame your robots.
Yeah, it's a fat bot.
Is it separated into different divisions, like in boxing and
wrestling?
Yeah,
there is. There's heavyweight, featherweight, beetle weight, and ant weight.
How big are the ant weight robots? Are they tiny little nanobots?
Yeah, well, they're about, listeners, I'm doing this with my finger. No, they are. Imagine
how small a man's penis gets in cold weather.
Imagine how small a man's penis is who builds his own robot instead of trying to engage with the opposite sex.
That's the official measurement.
One Brian. Yeah.
Brian, get over it. I think it's too big. They're made out of plastic and cardboard and whatnot. And the community has exploded since Robot Wars got cancelled last year. There's been about 3 or 4 more series come out, live events. So,
So it's the same people who would go on the TV. And
absolutely.
Is it a circuit? WWE goes around different cities in America. And
it genuinely is. It's an amazing community from going all the way back from the first wars to people that just started building.
To the first robot
first
wars.
Say the first wars.
Like
first
the Punic Wars. Coming back.
No, I like the thought of kind of like the... The robot wars were caused by an Austro-Hungarian robot being shot by a Serbian robot.
No, I think it was a nail gun. It was right between the eyes. Actually, if you watch Series 1 hosted by Jeremy Clarkson...
No.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, it was, wasn't it?
His patter at the beginning of every episode is... Well, it's mostly based on Argentina. I think he would have been watching something. The way he talks about it is like, the wars continue on, people are going crazy in the streets, women and children have fled. And then he wheels out the worst robots you've ever seen, and they just proceed to just nudge against each other for half an hour.
In that initial series, it's a little bit like the competitors of the Red Bull boxcar race have been badly booked.
It's glorious, it really is. And so, modern day, you've got your heavyweight for 110 kgs, your featherweight's only got up to 13 kgs. But in the first wars, there was absolutely no rules. So you just have these ones that were like 120 kgs up against something that some kid had just put his RC car and put some cardboard over it.
Bless.
And they're like, let's see who wins this. Well, I think I'm going to guess. talking about the worst robot, I kind of went at it with a couple of different angles.
Okay, great.
And the first thing that came up is possibly one of the most famous ones, and it's absolutely glorious. It's from a company called Nightscope, which is sinister enough sounding. And their website is terrifying to watch, and it's called the K5.
Oof. All of this sounds like weapon of mass destruction.
Yeah, it really is. It is genuinely that kind of nightmare fuel stuff. So the K5, it just take a Dalek, take off all like the weapons and whatnot, and it's just about a 5-foot cone that glides around, and it's designed for campuses, college, and shopping malls.
All right.
And it's got a 360 degree field of view. It has number plate recognition sensors. It has face recognition. It has thermal camera capabilities.
Okay.
And it has my favourite feature, which is a link to a Tannoy system, so the operator can just be like, "Oi, you, stop it now." Or it has just recorded voice notes that it'll just say on loop.
So it's like going around going, please don't sit on these steps.
Exactly that, yeah. Just a tin can room, like, get out of here. Stop loitering. Please stop loitering.
The library will close in 5 minutes.
Precisely that. So I think the first initial batch went out around the California area. There's about 5 or 6 of them. And quickly, they became quite famous for being the worst idea. Initially, I think the first round, they had to bring them back and do some tinkering, because all they did was get graffitied and beaten up by youths.
Of course.
So they could come back to the power save and be like tags all over them. Because they were just the most inert thing to just bump against some teenagers.
I'm also imagining that... In a world where the old traffic cone has become slightly too obvious, it's the new must-have item to have in your student bedroom.
Guys, I sold another K5. I've got a wrong robot wars going on, guys. Come on. So they took them back out and were a bit more assertive, I think, in their...
they installed a laser gun.
Yeah. Just a stapler, just to get real quick. And then they had to get recalled because... It sounds terrible, but one ran over a 16-month-old child.
Oh, Jesus!
Which is terrible.
But very slowly, presumably.
Top speed's 3 miles an hour. So a slow-moving disco Dalek was looking through its thermal cameras, just missed a child and just bumbled over it. And then they had to put a full stop on them being sent out for a year. because in Washington, D.C., one of the shopping malls, they found one face down in a fountain.
And they looked at it, couldn't live with it anymore.
They looked at the recording of it, and it just basically committed suicide. It just driven itself directly into me.
Was it warm water? Thermal imaging might have said,
then maybe that was it. Hang on, yeah. There's something strange going on there. But it's just a wonderful images on the internet of people just fishing out this robot. Robot has given up on life.
Oh, bless.
So, yeah, I think for real-world application, the Nightscope K5 gets my vote. But I was thinking about, you know, in fiction, you know, what is your worst robot in just pop culture?
Oh.
And, I went back and forth, and you could say the T-800 and whatnot, but that was doing what it was built to do, really. Yeah. That's quite a good robot. Mm. I settled on the idea that the worst robot, I think, in pop culture has to be the Bicentennial Man.
What is this thing you call love?
Well, imagine buying the top-end vacuum cleaner, and instead of keeping your house tidy, it bangs your granddaughter. That's the worst!
Hey.
What is this again? It's the worst.
Is he set on suck or blow?
So, yeah, I mean, all off to Robin Williams, but I feel like it's his robot.
It is, I think, objectively the worst Robin Williams movie.
Well, yeah, I watched it at a young age. I think it was quite formative for me, really. I think, you know, this is where we're all going.
Also, you don't really want a robot that philosophises. And so I thought you were going to say, like, imagine buying a vacuum cleaner, it just goes, what is dust? Yeah, what is clean?
Well, I mean, that, but also, you know, just...
It is quite a... Like, it's a poor effort, given that the whole idea about robots considering their humanity has been done literally since the Carol Campbell play. Because towards the end of it, there are two robots that fall in love, and one of the last human left alive sort of considers them as the new Adam and Eve. So they mm-hmm. this idea of the robots developing human urges and things is not very new. And I think the thing that Bicentennial Man... that grinds my gears, really, if you'll pardon the pun, really badly, is the fact that it pitches itself like it's the first person who's ever had this idea.
Hey, they put a Robin Williams' face on it. It looks great.
Yeah, and they've got I've got this great idea. What about a story where a guy meets a girl and falls in love?
Wait,
it's groundbreaking. Yeah. It's never been done ever.
But what if that guy's a robot? Go home, guys. Go home early.
I think the worst robot in pop culture is the robot in... Is it in Jabba's Palace? Is the one that brands the other robots?
Oh, yeah. No, it's in... you're right. I think
yeah.
You're right.
Okay, so in Return of the Jedi in Jabba's Palace, where Luke gives... I give you these two droids. Mm-hmm. He gives them R2 and C3, but they get taken to like a room to be branded with restraining bolt on, and the robot that's in there, who's like sassy evil robot, is the one who's in charge of branding his all the droids. I'm like, you've turned against your own kind.
He also tortures all the droids,
and he tortures them.
He's a robot Uncle Tom.
He's completely sided with the enemy. I would be my vote. Do you have a worst pop culture robot?
The only ones I can think of, which I just think they don't do their job very well, are the weird hulking robot birds in The Fifth Element that guard the Fifth Element.
Oh, yes.
And they basically, at the start of the movie, they fuck something up. I think they fuck up the delivery of Milly Jovovich.
They do, yes.
And that obviously is the inciting event for the entire rest of the movie. And they basically seem to be like weird robot bird priest DHL men. And if they actually could deliver things properly, then you... I mean, on the other side, you wouldn't get a good movie.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, a two-thirds good movie. Yes. But in the world of the movie... just deliver the package better and then the world doesn't need to get perilously close to an apocalypse.
If we're going with cyborgs or humans with like amendments and adjustments, mechanical adjustments, are robots as well. Also the Wheelers in Return to Oz.
Oh god, they're terrifying.
They are
utterly terrifying.
They are horrible. Real horrible.
Well, so I also thought I'd bring about old robot wars on my worst robot bet. So I originally started thinking, going controversial with it and saying Razor.
Who's
the
Razor?
Worst robot. Well, Razor is this glorious machine. It looks like it's got a hawk's beak on it. It's a crushing bot. It's beautifully sleek, and it's one of the fan favourites. Well, I thought I'd go controversial on it, because it was just a disappointment. It won one championship, I think, but it always looked like it was going to win, and then knackered itself by doing this wonderful little victory pose and getting stuck. And what are you doing? But then...
Is that the one it got like stuck on its beak?
Yeah, it just always did that. But
because it would try and slam its beak into another thing, just get stuck into the floor.
This is a bit of insider knowledge, which I hope will be a shock to your listeners and they'll like it. If you watch series one of Robot Wars, there are three fake robots in that series.
Fake robots?
There are three ringers. which were made by a guy called Derek Foxwell, but they're actually part of the Robot Wars show.
Oh, they're the production company.
Production built them because they couldn't get enough roboteers to enter the competition. They needed about 33, and they had 30. So like, all right, Derek, build three, and they'll just be ringers. And they won't. The deal was these three wouldn't get past the second round of each episode. They'll do a bit and then they'll just crash out. We'll allow them to get destroyed.
They wouldn't just let him enter three robots as like an entrance?
No, not at all. No. In fact, there were just other roboteers
pretending that they were there.
Yes, pretty much. Wow. Yeah. So there were three. There was one called Grunt, which is basically and it's an aircraft carrier.
I was hoping a pig robot with like a corkscrew tail that could spin really fast and drill into you.
Oh, you're way too advanced for Series 1. No, their weapons always consist of we've built this little axe that picks away, or it's like, it says weapons. There's Grunt. Yeah, so Grunt, he was very successful in doing what he was built to do. He was in the sumo challenge against Shunt, which were on house robots.
Oh.
And he immediately just goes the other way and just drives off the edge. Well done, Ringer. You have done the correct thing. But then there's another one called WYSIWYG, which is a wooden wedge. With, I think, the stripe from Starsky and Hutch down the side.
Amazing.
And it was in a competition of a football competition. And again, it was supposed to lose.
Yeah.
Had to lose. The roboteer, she immediately drove the other direction. But what they didn't count on is that the robots being entered by real roboteers were absolute crap as well. So there was one from Nuneaton, my hometown, called Dreadnought, that immediately packed up in the middle of the ring. And so the producers were like, shit. WYSIWYG has to lose this, but Dreadnought has failed immediately.
By default.
Well, what they did was they said, well, both WYSIWYG and Dreadnought died, but the ball got knocked into Dreadnought enough times that it got enough touches so it'll go through. But my actual one that is...
I'd love football work that way. It's a nil-all draw.
Yeah, but you touch the ball enough.
You touch the ball more enough. Yeah.
But my actual one, the ringer that is the worst robot for Robot Wars is Eubank the Mouse.
Eubank. As in Chris Eubank the boxer.
As in Chris Eubank the mouse. Yes. It's a cone with a mouse head on top and two metal arms that were supposed to be punching arms but just weren't. But again, it's a ringer, so it's supposed to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a game called Pinball where it's a circular arena. They all got their own little goals, and it's whoever gets the most balls in their goal wins, right?
Right.
So Eubank has to lose. It has to lose. There's another robot called Tracy. Tracy immediately breaks down in its own goal, blocking it. So balls can't accidentally roll in at all.
Oh, wow.
Eubank does a bit. It moves into the arena and is active most of the fight. So the producers are stuck here. We can see Tracy has no balls in her goal. Neither does Eubank, but Eubank was moving around. Clearly, Tracy's the loser. So Jonathan Pierce, the commentator from Football and Robot Wars, as the announcement says cease, you just get Jonathan Pierce frantically going, oh, and we've just heard Eubank the Mouse has had a catastrophic failure and won't be returning. We've not checked it yet, but it definitely won't be repairable. So, Eubank the Mouse is the worst robot because it couldn't even fail correctly.
From your different worlds, tying it all together, which of those is the very worst of robots?
Very worst of robots, let's see. I think for the kind of Shakespearean tragedy of Knightscope K5,
yes.
I have to say a robot that just, after it injured a child, just had to end it all, is probably the one for me.
That's fair enough.
First of all, we've got a homemade robot made by a gentleman called Rufus Terrill, who is a bar owner in America, and he is not a nice man. He was getting angry with various homeless people and drug addicts coming onto his property, and he wanted a way of sort of dealing with that. Now, that's not a nice thing for him to have to deal with, but maybe he could engage with the local law and order authorities, or perhaps social services, or maybe go the Jesus route and invite them in for a nice hot warm meal before sending them out into the night. No, he instead built the Bumbot.
Oh, God. Not a robotic arse.
Not a robotic arse. Instead, he put together some steel, plywood, old gym mats, a meat smoker, a walkie-talkie, and some spare parts from a 1997 Chevrolet.
This is from 1997.
Yeah, it was basically used to shoo them away. He also mounted a camera on the robot that streamed videos of it trying to get rid of the bums back into his bar. So he basically had people getting enjoyment via the security bot shooing away homeless people.
Oh.
Yes. The website that I found this article on did describe the bum bot as Hobocop.
Okay. Oh, I'll give you that, Hobocop.
Yeah. The names are on point.
Yeah.
We're going to go back to Japan.
Of course we are.
Yeah.
Because it's robots.
Because it's robots.
And it's this show.
Yeah. Yeah. I did describe this show to a mate last night, kind of like, it's amazing that the answers are normally either Nazis, evangelical Christians, or the Japanese.
Walk into a bar.
Yeah.
To watch Hobocop.
Yeah.
Oh, they love that.
Yeah.
If we can find something at the middle of that Venn diagram. But I found a new Japanese robot called Robo-Q, and he works for the Tokyo Fire Department. It is meant to take over the dangerous task of rescuing people from smoke-filled buildings.
Oh, no.
Is this robot metallic?
Yeah. You may have spotted design flaw number one.
Come into my arms. I really don't want to.
But rescuing people while branding them.
There is a robot in the Star Wars universe that approves. But it basically looks like it's a probably, I don't know, probably 7-8 foot high, and it looks, so it sort of looks like the back of a bin lorry with like a conveyor belt that looks an awful lot like a mouth that drags the people onto it and hides them inside a compartment.
God.
But not content with rescuing prone people, it is also
eating prone people.
Eating prone people. It has also been adapted to collect corpses.
Oh my.
So what I want is, from last week's episode of the London Acropolis Railway,
if it
could sort of like do a match-up with that, and it kind of like, you could use the rubber eco to suck up the corpses and then fire them onto the Necropolis Railway.
Or if it
railway.
Had like, okay, it has the mouth, it has a conveyor belt, and the first chamber is like the safety chamber, the second chamber is basically an oven. And they could immediately perform cremations. Or no, you not even bother, leave them in the fire until the person's finished. And then just a compartment opens with a little hand and a dustpan and brush and just sweeps them up.
Or just put them on the road and become a salt spreader.
Yeah. Oh my God. I feel this hasn't gone far enough, this idea.
I would agree, gentlemen, you're right. This is a mostly pointless and again slightly creepy robot. In Stuttgart, researchers have created the Huggybot.
Don't like it.
The Huggybot is a modified P2 robot. I'm sure you all know what that is. Covered in layers of foam, polyester, and other materials. And the hugs it gives can be modified according to the firmness of the embrace you prefer. And you can even opt for a heated hug.
Which
is sort of nice. The creator, one of the leading researchers, Alexis Blocker, said, "A robot hugging a person is a good idea because people may crave the benefits that come from a hug at a time when they can't get a hug from a person due to factors such as distance, timing, and health."
Oh. Well, I mean, so in fairness, certain conditions like autism and stuff, people like pressing and close contact and stuff.
Okay.
So I mean, I imagine they didn't build it with that in mind. They just went, let's make a robot that hugs.
My mind immediately goes to what can go very wrong, which is a crushing robot that's scalding hot.
Yeah. Yeah, you've accidentally made kind of like a Breville. But I went back in time and looked back at some stuff that's like partially robotic, partially automaton. And again, we're going back to the railroad. We spoke last week about all the different types of sort of proto-locomotives. But we didn't talk about a chap called Zadok Dederick. Hell of a name.
Wow. Is he a Victorian inventor and eccentric?
Please. He was an American inventor and eccentric. He originally wanted to come up with a perpetual motion machine, of course, but he couldn't. So instead, he wanted to come up with a sort of a humanoid alternative to locomotives or horses that would draw carriages. So he essentially came up with a robot that could pull a cart. Well, no, not robot horses. This was a nearly 8 foot tall gentleman called Daniel Lambert. I don't know.
Does the robot have a more normal name than the inventor?
So Daniel Lambert apparently could go at 60 miles an hour.
That's terrifying.
And had his own metallic stovepipe hat and pipe that he smoked.
No.
I'll show you a picture of... There's a picture of the design.
Oh, my.
Oh, Jesus.
That's glorious.
And there's... And I'll try and put these pictures up
it's
on
It's like a dude hot pulling a litter, isn't it?
Yes. The only reason it didn't get made more is because it cost $2,000 a piece to make, which in the 1860s was about $35,000, I think.
Ooh-wee.
For an 8-foot-tall robot that sprints at you, smoking a pipe.
60 miles an hour.
That's insane.
Yeah.
For the time, though, that's phenomenal technology.
Yeah.
They actually built one.
Yes, they built. He built one, but they were like, "Right, well, this is quite expensive. We're not."
Where was he based in America?
Wherever the most amount of robot-based nightmares were happening, it was there. The epicenter of there.
Based in New Jersey, Newark, New Jersey.
Oh, nice.
Based.
Oh, surrounded by water.
Yeah.
Set him off and immediately just ran into the sea.
I would love to spend some time, maybe part of the show, looking through patents from the 19th century. Oh, this was patented in 1868, and
1868 is great.
Yeah. It's an incredible...
Is he steam-powered, you say?
Yeah, steam-powered. Yeah. It looks like the fat controller just went, bollocks to this, I'm going to pull Thomas myself.
So, do you think that's what happened? That the trains in Thomas the Tank Engine were actually carriages being pulled by a large man, and the carriage went too fast and just it sort of smashed into him, and his face has been absorbed into the front.
Yeah, it's like the fly.
Yeah. Oh my God, Jeff Goldblum's Thomas the Tank Engine.
Oh, someone needs to make that, please.
Yeah. Forget Ringo Starr, I want Jeff.
No, but the thing is, people didn't realise that they could. They never stopped to think if they should. I went to 18th century France and discovered a guy called Jacques Vaucanson, who was described as the father of modern robots. Now, I think we've talked about this before, and I can't remember where, but he created an automaton duck that he would feed pellets to and bits of food to, and this automaton duck would then poop real turds.
Oh, yes.
And the way it worked was that basically the pellet would go in and it would go through the digestive system that had loads of moving parts and then would hit a hammer that opened up a container of preloaded poop. And then the robot duck would then poop. And this went around all the royal courts.
Of course it did.
Even Voltaire saw this. And Voltaire quoted that without the Duck of Aucanson, you have nothing to remind you of the glory of France.
That's phenomenal. I mean, even today you brought that out, people would be thrilled.
I love the 1700s when it seems just like the courts of Europe were just full of people showing off their bonkers automata.
Yeah, there was another one that I found this, I think from a little bit earlier on, the Smithsonian Institute in 1977 found a small statue of a medieval monk it's clockwork, and it walks in a square, strikes his chest with his right arm, raising and lowering a small wooden cross and a rosary in his left hand, then rolls his eyes, and he occasionally raises the cross to his lips and kisses it.
Rolls his eyes, like he's being sarcastic. Yeah. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and I guess of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Why did you program to do that?
It was made, they reckon, around the 1560s. So in 1562, the heir to the throne of Spain sustained a serious head wound that caused him a fever and blindness. The king, his father, thought all was lost until the heir was reportedly cured by the miraculous corpse of a Spanish monk that had been dead for 100 years. So, in his desperation, the king had allowed the monk's mummified remains in bed with his son. That is the only safe monk to put in bed with your son. And apparently, it cured him. And so, to commemorate it, he commissioned a moving replica of the dead monk.
Wow.
Okay.
What was he ill with? Did it say?
Was he
ill with overconfidence?
Yeah.
I know what was going on. A dead monk in your bed. Yeah.
This kid sleeps far too well.
Yeah.
Yeah. He got a serious head wound.
Oh yes.
And apparently, what you do in those situations is put a clockwork, put a real monk in him.
Yeah.
Not put a real monk in him.
Edit that out. That's staying in. You heard it here. WebMD, Ben Vanderbilt.
It'd be just a one monk.
Yeah. A monk enema.
A lot of mead, I imagine. Yeah. But for my choice, we are going to talk about the WD2, which is absolutely horrifying. It is a face replication robot. And what it is, you have a rubberized face mask which has several different pistons going in it, and it can mimic different facial features and expressions and morph from one different face to another.
So it stretches and moves and...
Oh my God. Oh,
wow.
Yeah. Now, it was made in 2003. I have to tell you, it's not very good.
It's like deep fakes before deep fakes.
Yeah, yeah. It's computers. Like a deep fake in the real world.
Yeah.
But you it essentially looks at your face in front of you and then tries to morph into your own face. So it's almost like a robot version of the Louis Two Swords waxwork. And it's deeply disturbing because it's just a disembodied head with loads of pistons going into it.
Oh my God.
That looks like an artwork for some sort of metal band in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah, it really does actually, yeah.
It has 17 facial points with a total of 56 degrees of freedom. And it's made from a highly elastic material called septum. It doesn't feel nice, with bits of steel wool added in for strength.
Did they make it for any particular purpose, or just because they could?
I think it was because they could.
And second question, because this would be what would happen now, is it would be demonstrated with, like, opposite a celebrity. Did they do any celebrity face matches?
They did not do that.
Guys, that's why it didn't gain popularity.
Yeah.
It looks a bit like what you imagine is going on the front of Darth Vader's face when you see it from the back. Yes. In Empire Strikes Back. When they've got the mask off and you see all the like stuff around it. Yeah.
It just utterly crept me out. It's not kind of like disastrous. I mean, it's not famous, but there's something really deeply unsettling about watching the face being powered by pistons behind it as it moves.
Yeah, and I think there's something really like unsettling about blank canvas faces.
Yeah.
In the way that, like, it doesn't look like any face you've ever seen. Like the face masks in... Is it Eyes Wide Shut where they're like...
Yes.
Yeah, like the Eyes Wide Shut face mask. They've got this, like, bland emptiness to it before anything has been done to it. And you're like, I don't trust what's going to happen to this.
Yeah, I don't trust it before it's morphed. And then as it's morphing, I trust it even less. And then once it's morphed, I just want a hug.
Yeah.
From the hug bot.
Yeah.
No, you're fine. But where is this terrifying disembodied face now? Because it's been around for 16 years or so.
It's aged horribly.
Yeah.
I presume still in Japan.
Just, I hope it's hidden away somewhere, like an Ark of the Covenant.
It didn't reach the big time. It's working as a receptionist in a Hen and Nan hotel.
Just staring at you blankly, blinking.
Yeah.
Our choices this week are the entirety of the robot stuff from the Henna Hotel in Japan. Rob's suggestion of the K5 Nightscope. The robot that is unable to negotiate a fountain. Or mine of the face-morphing horror show WD2. All good suggestions. Barry, I like yours very much so, because it was mine last time and it won.
Yeah.
But also because I like the idea that it's a robot that's so rubbish it needs constant human support.
Yeah, so that is the best thing about it. Like, we've eliminated the human staff, we're now rehiring more human staff.
Yes. I am deeply creeped out by mine, but it appears, I imagine it's locked in a vault somewhere underground in Japan, and so it's doing no harm, no foul.
Until some bumbling idiot finds it, puts it on his face.
Oh, God.
And then starts in basically a real life version of The Mask.
Oh my God.
Absolutely. It's probably just sat in that vault just cycling through all the faces that there's ever seen.
Kind of like a robot version of the picture of Dorian Gray.
Yes.
But I think as much as I am scared of mine and find yours hilarious, the fact that Rob's, I just love the idea of it face down in a fountain,
yeah,
politely asking the water molecules to get out of the way. So for that reason, the Nightscope K5 is the winner. We go to the world's worst news this week, and it is robot-based news, and it is bad news for robots. Specifically, there was a man versus machine race between a Polish climber called Marcin Jasinski and an elevator in Poland. And I had
just one question: was the race performed vertically or horizontally?
It was performed vertically, upwards, not downwards.
Okay.
Because downwards, that is a win for gravity. Climbers every time. But Marcin Jasinski, who is a world champion speed climber, beat an elevator up 23 metres.
Oh, I think
That's
I saw
amazing.
This guy recently. They like, it's like 7 or 8 seconds they can do.
Yeah,
like
12 seconds.
Is that, wow?
It's breathtaking. So good news for humanity, bad news for our future robot overlords.
Yeah, just wait till elevators figure out how to go side to side, like in the Great Glass Elevator. Wonka must be stopped.
Yeah. Amazing. So that's us for this week. Before we go, Rob, where can people find you and what can they find you doing when they get there?
They can find me on the podcast Roboteers Stand By, which is on all of your usual podcast wares. And I'm also hosting the most current Robots live show in Stevenage on the weekend of the 28th and 29th of September. So if you want to see some robot combat, come on down.
It's my parents' wedding anniversary. Send them along.
That's why we did it then. Yeah. You know they're lovely. Robot mad.
Yeah, that's what they'd want. Brilliant. We are all off to design some lifeguard robots to help out the poor Nightscape K5. Until next time.
Bye.
First Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.